Hey guys, Michael here really quick because we tried to make this announcement during the original recording and it came out long and sort of terrible. Short and sweet, I want to tell you, if you don't know, we wrote a book. The book is called The Break-In, or How 2 20-Year-Olds Launch Their Film Careers Without Money, Connections, or Permission. I'm not going to tell you everything about it because you can learn about it at riotstudios.com/book, but just know we're really proud of it. We wrote it for aspiring filmmakers, and we think you're going to love it. And as of the day this episode releases, for 1 week only, you can get a big pre-order discount. The book releases in December, but if you pre-order this week, we can do this bulk pricing thing where we're able to give it to you cheaper. So go buy the book, riotstudios.com/book. You can also download the introduction for free. We think you're going to love it. Thanks for listening to my plug, and now enjoy the show. Hey, the election's over.
Yeah,
it's a big deal.
No, it is. Hillary Clinton, man, first female president. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Okay, cut. Do you think we're going to need to do one for Trump, just in case?
No.
Hi there, I'm Michael B. Allen.
And I'm Will Backey.
And this is episode 12 of the Riot Studios podcast. Mm. Welcome. What are we going to be talking about, Will?
Today's actually going to be a great episode, and I don't know why I say actually.
It's
always a great episode. I get really excited about this topic. We're talking about acting today. And
acting.
The art of acting. And yes. I'm really excited about it, man. I feel like I talk to a lot of filmmakers that want to make movies, but I probably talk to even more actors. And it's usually people that I would not expect want to be actors. And I'd say about 80% of them aren't really serious. It's kind of like, I just kind of wish I was. But I want to answer, I want us to talk about a lot of questions that actors are asking. And those include, how do I become a professional actor? Do I need to live in L.A.? What are the steps to booking gigs? Do I need an agent? Maybe what is life like on set for actors? I think we want to give some auditioning tips from our experiences. We casted Definitely. Believe Me and saw hundreds of auditions and have learned a lot of things about what makes a good audition, how you can book your next gig. And so we'll tell some stories from that experience and you know, really, how can an actor stand out on set and or stand out in the audition process and really make this a career, right? That's what we want. We want you, if you really want to be an actor, to learn things from this episode that can help you achieve that.
Yeah.
So we're going to, I did the outline for this one this week, and it's pretty rudimentary in that we're going to go through the who, what, where, when, whys.
Love it.
Love it? All right. So the first thing that I want to talk about is who should be an actor, Michael. Is it only the pretty people? What's the deal?
Yeah, yeah. If you're not a 9 or 10, give up now. Hang it up. If you look in the mirror and just think, I'm not as hot as I wish I was, you're not cut out for this. And you're not very valuable as a person, as a human being.
So none of that's true, actually. We think that really anyone can be an actor. I think it's often that we see it's just really beautiful people in Hollywood. But turns out in all of those movies, in every movie, there's people of all looks, shapes, and sizes that fill them.
Especially in good movies.
Especially in great films. They're very realistic. The point I want to drive home here is you do not have to be beautiful to be an actor. There are a lot of famous actors that are hideous to look at. Steve Buscemi crushes it every day. And that guy is terrifying to look at.
Wasn't.
What I'm trying to say is you should be an actor. It's you, guys. All right, let's cut through it. It's you. You should be an actor if you want to be. But here's the catch to that. When it comes to who should be an actor, it is a very special type of person that can make it in this industry. And it's typically the people that have the greatest resiliency when faced with certain failure over and over again.
Yeah, I think with acting and really with most roles in this industry, even I think the same thing applies to filmmakers, possibly to a lesser degree, but I always say the only people that I would really strongly recommend this to are people where it feels inevitable that you will act. you know, or it feels inevitable that you will be a filmmaker. You're not counting on some break to make it worth your career getting started. You just can't help but want to perform. If that's you and you think, I can keep doing this and enjoying this regardless of if I ever get my big break, then I would recommend, you know, dive in and try to give yourself a chance to start a career in acting. If that's not you, if it feels kind of like a grind and it's not enjoyable and you only really see yourself being happy if you get the big break, as sad as it is, I would just say it's probably best you quit now. Not because you're less of a person or you're a loser or anything, just because this is a really difficult thing to do. And if you can't be fulfilled just by the doing of it, if it requires some other lucky thing to happen, then you're probably just bringing on a lot of heartache and a lot of disappointment that is just not needed.
Yeah, as dark as it sounds to start off this podcast about acting, telling you not to be an actor, I do think that you raise a good point, and I think that it's worth stressing again that this is just a really difficult industry. I think, you know, we know friends that are in theater, we know friends that are musicians and other filmmakers, and I think above all of those that I think are so difficult to make it in, I think acting is probably the hardest because there are so many people that want to be actors. And I mean, it's the dream, right? I think everybody deep down kind of wants to be an actor. But it's a grind to actually get to a point where you can make a steady income acting. And I just don't know that many people that are.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing, I think the thing you say about everyone kind of wants to be an actor is I think everyone kind of wants to be famous because we sort of worship celebrity and famous people in our culture, which is not a good thing. Most of the greatest people in our culture are not famous, and you will never know their name or what they look like. But when you constantly see this, like putting famous people up on a pedestal, it's hard to not let that get ingrained in your brain that like those are the valuable people and I want to be valuable. And the truth is, like, you do not need to be famous to be valuable. You know, you are valuable now, and if you're passionate about acting, that's great, and act. But don't pursue this because of being famous. Because the truth is, if you look at celebrities and you look at famous people, the odds of them getting this thing that they were chasing for so long and finally being happy are actually lower, you know? So don't chase fame.
So if you're still with us, if you're still listening and you thought, all right, guys, I know that this is for 90% of the people, but I can't imagine doing anything else than act. We want to talk to you about how to do that and how to become an actor. So
I performed the weed out that opening segment.
So there's some people that just clicked this off, no question. And I love that.
Stick around for next episode next week.
So the first step, if you want to become an actor, and I want to preface this, a lot of this is speculative. This is from our experience of here's what we would do if we were in your position. After knowing some actors and working with some and learning about how they got their start, the first thing I would recommend is just study acting. I mean, you need to learn it.
What do you think about like acting classes? You know, I mean, we both studied theater and took some acting classes in high school. I haven't done it since then.
Yeah.
I actually think I would like to, but how much value do you attribute to those kind of things?
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be able to know something and it's another to be able to do it, right? So you can study acting and watch a lot of movies and study the greats, but if you're not doing it, then you're not going to get any better at it. So I think things like improv and sketch comedy and getting involved in as many things as you can is super important. That's what's going to help you chip away at your craft and make it even more well-defined.
I mean, doing it absolutely is the number one thing. I think I've seen, in the way of learning it, I've seen a lot of people take a lot of classes or go through a graduate school or something. And it's not bad, but it kind of tricks people into thinking that they can ascertain this certain level of head knowledge that's going to get them there. And that's just not how it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a much more instinctive art form that you pick up by doing it a lot and settling into what your voice is and what your natural talents are and being able to do those to the best of your ability. But I think, I don't know, I've just seen people fall, and this goes for a lot of art forms, but I've seen people fall into this pit of thinking, well, I've taken 3 years of classes, so I know more than this guy, therefore I should be more successful. And it's like, when it comes down to it, nobody knows what classes you took or didn't take when you're on screen,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
or when you're on stage. It just matters whether they're entertained by your performance.
Yeah. I think what it does give you that, to me, separates good actors from great actors is a level of confidence, right? So
yeah.
when you take these classes and you study the craft, you get a sense of confidence that when you go into these auditions, it shows. And it shows in spades. I think that the more stuff you do, if the first step is learn it and the second step is do it, the do it part is what's going to help you get over the biggest hurdle, I think, in this industry. And that's establishing confidence. Because there's two things from our experience with Believe Me, and we'll talk about this more later, but there's the two things that we looked for most when casting that film was confidence and intelligence.
Well, I think what you're getting at maybe is it's a, like, it requires a lot of emotional intelligence. It's not just knowing the inflection at which to read a certain line, you know, the technical proficiency of being able to talk really dramatically or, you know, talk with a funny inflection or whatever, but it's like knowing the emotional beat of the scene and being able, you really need to know people is what you need to know.
Yeah.
And if you know people and you know what the script is, what emotion the script is trying to get at, you can deliver a real and hopefully compelling performance. Whereas if you're just trying to go with these technical head knowledge kind of ways to perform, it's not going to come off as very human or, you know, create strong emotions in the audience.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I feel like if there was a role that was a frat bro, right? And you had two actors come in and one went to Harvard and
right.
one is just an actual frat bro, I would trust the Harvard guy to act like a frat bro better than the person that actually is one.
Huh.
Because I believe that they can actually read a script, decipher who the character is, understand the intricacies of that character and what they're supposed to do, even if it's something as silly as a frat bro, but be able to project that rather than just be themselves and deliver lines.
Yeah, well, I think what that makes me think of is even a real frat bro trying to act like a frat bro is you said acting like himself, but I think more often than not what happens is they act like what they think a movie version of a frat bro acts like.
Yeah.
And not what the actual character they're portraying would be like, you know?
Yeah.
So you bring in all these stereotypes that we've seen 100 times before, and you bring that in as boring. We've already seen that before,
yeah.
you know? We don't need more of that. But people are really more imitating than they are being a certain character, you know?
Yeah. It's just intelligence. It's being able to look at a character from a different vantage point and be able to see what the script needs. So learn it, do it. And then from that point, you're like, all right, I want to get into this industry. How do I start booking gigs? What do I need to do next? And this part is going to be a little bit different for everybody. But I think everyone tends to think at this point, okay, I need an agent. I need to get with an agency. I need headshots. I need to build a reel up. And that's going to help me start getting gigs. And you're not wrong. Those things will help you. But none of those things are going to make your career. And that's probably the most important thing that we can say about that. Finding a friend that can take portraits and take your photo and get you a good headshot is a great step. You know,
yeah.
there's people that pay $100 for a headshot and, it helps them get on their way, which about, if I can speak to headshots real fast, get a headshot that looks like you. Don't get the most beautiful looking headshot. The one that when you look at, you're like, wow, that doesn't really look like me, but I look really handsome in it or beautiful, maybe more than realistically. You want a headshot that looks like you because there's nothing worse for a casting director or a director to see someone come in that you've looked at their headshot and wanted and it's a totally different person. It just doesn't help your case.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think headshots, like, don't look, this is like a hard thing to know how to say, but don't look like a weird actor type. Look like a person, you know, and look like the type of person you would want to portray and not like you're part of some, I don't know, like whenever I get this glamour shot from a person, it just makes me think, ugh, you're probably a weird actor. Like, I don't know if I want to deal with that.
What you said though is really good. You have to be yourself. And I would say you should be whatever you're trying to go for. You know, if you're going out for a comedy, I kind of want to see a headshot of you smiling and looking like you're laughing or having fun and that you genuinely look like a funny guy to be in this comedy. Uh-huh. If you're a dramatic actor going for a drama, then give me something more dramatic. I wouldn't want to see that same headshot for the drama film that I'm casting. You know, so I would say have a variety, know what you're submitting it to, but yeah, be authentic, be a real person. So get a headshot. I think a reel is also important. If you have stuff that you've been in, find a friend that's an editor or learn the software yourself. It's not that difficult to cut together
a reel. You can do it in iMovie, honestly, if nothing else.
Yeah, put some music to it, put it really low, bring it down for the scenes, and just show us what you can do, because here's why that's important. We have used several casting websites. We've used agencies to cast short films, you know, commercials, and even our films. And we've used things like Backstage.com, which is a great resource for actors to put their headshot up, their reel up, their resume. It helps producers and directors like us to be able to search their website for exactly what we're looking for. So you can be specific on those things. There's things like Backstage. You can literally, we searched on Craigslist. We went to agencies and told them, here's what we're shooting. Do you have people in this age range that look like this? And they would send us people. And those are all great resources. Finding an agency, getting your resume on platforms like Backstage, and there's plenty of other casting websites like that, will help you spread your net as far as you can.
Well, we're talking about getting a reel. I think a common excuse from actors, aspiring actors, is like, well, I haven't found enough stuff to be in. It's kind of this like catch 22. You need a reel to get in stuff, but you can't get in stuff unless you have an impressive reel, and the cycle of rejection continues. And to that, I would just say, you have to make your own stuff. You know, it's not easy, you know, and I'm not going to act like it's easy, but if you're really driven to do this, there's no excuse for you to not be making sketches on the weekends with your friends, you know. Or, I mean, Will, you just made a short, I don't think it was for your acting reel necessarily, but you just made a short by yourself with no cast and crew this weekend. So like, it's possible to make something cool to showcase your talent. Honestly, you sitting in front of your Mac camera and riffing an improv scene and trying to be funny is better than nothing.
Yeah.
You know, we as directors would rather see some little seed of greatness, you know, that's like, I think this person could be funny if she had a good script to work with. Then if we see your glamour shot or whatever, we have nothing really to go off of, you know? So something is better than nothing, and be consistently, like monthly even, recutting it. Like, keep that timeline saved where you can keep adding more stuff to it and picking the best of the best stuff to show people.
So I have a crazy idea I kind of want your opinion on. I have this theory that if I was an actor and I was going to try and make it in acting, I would spend $5,000 max, mm-hmm, and just find the most badass cinematographer I can in town. And I would write 5 scenes that are all 20 to 30 seconds long and try and shoot all of those in 3 days, 2 to 3 days.
Yeah.
And have them be spread out in variety to show dramatic range, you know, show that I can do comedy, drama, horror, whatever it is, and just put together a sick reel doing that. I mean, if I really want to be an actor and I'm not willing to spend $5,000 on that or work, you know, however long I need to make that, to invest in that reel,
yeah,
then you probably shouldn't be an actor because you probably don't really care that much. But I do think that that's a great idea because it does, and I agree, it does stand out when you can just do something even with like your iPhone or on a computer. But when we see reels and we see actors in really good looking projects, it ups their value tenfold.
Right. And the reason for that is, because we think, well, someone else that's legit has done the due diligence and chosen that person to be in their higher budget thing.
Absolutely.
So if this person that spent a bunch of money chose them, surely they're worth looking at for us too. You know, that's why it is. It's not even a prestige thing of like you're associated with greatness. It's just a very practical, if they made it through the process to get into that movie, maybe they could make it through our process to get into ours.
100%. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a nice little hack to the reel game. But mm-hmm, I would believe it. I really wouldn't care if I saw your reel And it was these little vignette scenes that looked amazing and you did great in. And then I found out they aren't real movies. I just wouldn't really care. I'd be like, no, he delivered in this. It looks awesome. Yeah, I see it.
I think, do you think they just need to own it if that's the case? Like if you're a director and you're like, dude, I saw that performance you gave in that one thing. What was that movie? When's it coming out? Do they just need to say, oh yeah, I just shot that on my own to, I mean, I think they should just
own it. And, Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. Cause to me, I'm like, yes, like this guy or girl knows what's up. Like they know what they want to do. They invested in this reel to make it the best thing that they could. And I love that. I think I would be pumped to see if someone cared that much about their craft to create a reel like that.
Yeah.
And show variety, 20 to 30 seconds for a scene. That's not that hard. It's a little bit of dialogue.
I like that. I really like that a lot. And I think too, your point to the $5,000 cinematographer is maybe it's also worth a couple hundred extra dollars to get a writer and or director to look at your scenes that you're shooting.
Yeah.
I think the reality is if you're just trying to be an actor, you're probably not the greatest writer director. Otherwise you would probably be trying to do those things professionally too.
Right.
So enlist the help of anyone you can, even if it's your smartest friend, to look at your dialogue and help you make sure it doesn't ruin your efforts by being something cheesy or stupid.
Yeah. Here's the last thing I'll say about reels. If you are trying to just go into comedy, make a comedic reel. If you're trying to go into drama, make a dramatic reel. I think what we're talking about doing this variety thing is great. But if you already know, I just want to do comedy or I just want to do drama, focus on that. You don't need to make a variety if you know that there's only one thing that you want to do. And the more specific you can be, that's great. That actually helps us out. Because if I'm looking for comedic actors and I get to see five scenes of different kinds of comedy from you, then that's going to help your chances. But yeah, you don't need to make a variety if you only want to do one thing. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in doing one thing. It's probably even to your benefit. So,
true. It's good.
Okay, so maybe you've developed a reel. Maybe you've gotten headshots and you're like, I need to get an agent or an agency. Michael, how do they get on the radar of these agencies?
Well, I think sending reel and headshot to agencies. So with agencies, if you're talking about big industry like Hollywood, you've got the big agencies like CAA, UTA, Gersh.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just getting started and you haven't been picked at least as a local casting, you know, if you're not in LA and you haven't done something impressive already, you're probably not going to catch the eyes of, I mean, you're not going to catch the eyes of those agencies. So you'll want to start with a smaller agency. And from what I know, you send in your stuff. You try to network and find someone that works there as an agent or an assistant or even the front desk person, and send them your stuff. And I know for like at least Texas agencies, it's not extremely competitive. I mean, they seem to have, they represent a number of different kinds of talent and have a lot of people. Now, the other side to that is these types of agencies are not going to just get you a bunch of jobs.
Mm-mm.
It's more like a minor stamp of legitimacy that you have agency representation. If it's a no-name agency, it doesn't really mean much, just to be dead honest. But what it does do is, so I'll give a practical example. We were casting our short film and we sent the information for auditions out to a number of local talent agencies. We just said, hey, this is an unpaid thing, but it's a short shoot and we think some of your actors might really enjoy being a part of it. We sent it out and we actually ended up casting a couple of people that came in from those local agencies. And now it wasn't because of the prestige of being represented by the agency, but it was because of the contact at the agency that they even found out about the project sent our way. Yeah.
I think, so just to demystify this, if you don't understand the process, producers take the script, they hire a casting director. The casting director looks at the script and says, okay, and I'm just going to use you as an example, Mike. Okay, we need a 28-year-old white guy for this role. All right. So they reach out to agencies and they say, we're trying to cast a 28-year-old white guy. So send me anybody that's in that range. They might even be 23 years old or 35, but could play a 28-year-old white guy. If they seem right for the role, the agency will say, oh, please, we've got these actors. Here's some headshots. We want to send these people your way. If you'd like to look at them and just kind of cross some off the list right off the bat, off their headshots and reels, go for it. If not, we'll send some auditions your way. And if you're an actor, that's really what you're hoping for. I mean, that's the perks of being in an agency is you give them your reel, your headshot. They think, okay, you've got some level of talent or some, you know, you look like someone that has some potential. And if you're in their database, then when productions come to them looking for somebody that looks like you, they'll send you to an audition.
Yep.
That's the whole process. And that's what's helpful about having an agency is that's what they'll do. But getting in them, getting in the big ones in LA, you're going to have done stuff before. You're going to have been on a CW show or been a part of independent films that really do show a good range. I don't know if this whole reel idea of ours will translate there. It could.
It's much more of an indie film hack maybe than if you're trying to get into legit big time stuff.
But it does, again, I do think it helps for any agent that's considering you, if they can see you in stuff and see the potential, because you're really just trying to shorten the gap that they have to imagine of you being a great actor.
Yeah.
If you have no, if you have nothing, then they have to imagine a lot. If you have something, then they have to imagine little. So, so you've done this, okay? You've gotten an agent, you've gotten representation. Maybe you're in the mix somewhere and you're starting to do auditions.
Yeah.
How do you audition well? How do you stand out in your auditions? What's the most important things?
The most important thing to me, I've said this 100 times, 1,000 times since we casted Believe Me, is just do something different in your audition. We watched so many good-looking, talented, smart people that were working in Hollywood, but they came in and they did the exact same thing, which was a just down-the-middle performance of our script. And it was fine, it was enjoyable, but we didn't remember those people, you know? And I always just say it's better to go in. I would rather an actor come in and like freak me out because he's so far off what I wanted, but he tried something adventurous and courageous and weird, than someone just come in and give a down the middle performance. Cause when you give that, you're trying to compete against a ton of other people that are undoubtedly doing the exact same thing. So it's better to set yourself apart, even if that completely takes you out of contention. It's better to set yourself apart because there's a small chance that the director or producer could look at you and go, oh, I didn't even realize that's what we wanted, but now that I've seen it, I can't forget it. And there were actors that came in that were way off base of what we wanted for Believe Me, but we still remember some of these guys.
Yeah.
And we still think back to their auditions and what an interesting take on it was. And, you know, as we're making our future films, we might make special efforts to bring them back in for an audition and give them another chance. So it's a long-term play, too, to be weird and be different. I'm not saying be weird. I'm just saying try to bring something that you don't think anyone else is bringing to that character and take it far, you know?
Mm.
Don't play it safe.
Yeah, it's... To me, again, it's confidence and intelligence. I think if you can go in realizing that there are 100 other people that look just like you that are reading the exact same words, that if you do it right down the middle, it's just not going to be memorable and it's not going to stand out. And we definitely will call these actors back that kind of reached for something that wasn't right then, but is probably right for something else. And that's what we had to tell a lot of these actors is like, dude, you're great. This is just not the right role for you. But in a lot of cases, we had actors come back that auditioned for one role in Believe Me, only to come back and audition for another role in Believe Me. Because once we saw how different they were, we thought, oh, well, this isn't right for them, clearly. But there's another role that it might be great for. So do something different. And the way that you do that is just read the sides, read the script, and really study it and really look at, okay, this is what everyone else is probably going to do, but here's what I'm seeing below the layers. I mean, you kind of have to pour into the character more than you've probably been given. You probably haven't been given the whole script. You don't know everything that's going to happen. Only these small sides are available to you to interpret. But if you have a reason that you did that and approached it that way, and you can explain that in the audition to me after your performance. I read that as intelligence. This is someone that is here not just to be famous, but because they do want to be a great actor, and they're willing to work hard to get this right. And I love that.
Yeah. I'm going to go on a, I'm in thinking about this, I'm thinking of a couple other things. I'm going to go on a mini rant here.
All right.
And the rant is, know your sides, know your dang sides when you go into an audition. I mean, memorize your lines. If you can't remember three pages for an audition where you're trying to earn the role, why as a director, producer, do I think you're going to come to set and not slow us down by not knowing your lines? You know, it immediately says so much. And I will say, we did Austin auditions for Believe Me, and we did LA auditions. And in just about every, I'll say, I think 100% of our Hollywood auditions, every actor knew every line. They maybe had like one or two slip-ups, but they knew every line, and they knew the scene. In almost every Texas local audition, they did not know the lines. It's like, you're already in danger of not being taken as seriously because you're not in Hollywood. You gotta come in and know your lines. That's like step one. And I understand people are busy and you're probably staying up late just to learn some of the lines. I get it. I sympathize with that. But if you're serious about acting and you seriously want my role that I'm trying to entrust to somebody, how do you not memorize your script and come in? And the other part of that, part of the reason people forget is because they get nervous naturally. Again, I'm not a professional actor. I'm sure that's really difficult and you would get really insecure, especially if this is not like you've been doing it for a long time. But there's no faster way to turn me off to you as a professional than when you start getting really insecure. And you know, we saw this one audition where a guy came in and he gave a pretty good performance. We were kind of like into it, and then he missed a line, and then he just started like cussing himself out and like almost crying. And we were like, whoa, this is super weird. Like this guy might be crazy. and he lost it so quickly. It was really sad. If this person's out there, I'm really sorry. I hope you're all right. But, but I'm just saying, if you slip up, stay confident and stay upbeat and normal and natural, and don't fall apart if you can help.
It's confidence. It seriously is. Cause I hear that, and I think you should know your lines. But even if you don't know your lines and you mess it up and you have to riff a little bit, but you're confident as that character, I don't care. Like, I don't care about the lines as much. Yeah. If you know who you are pretending to be and can deliver, you know, because I'm not sitting there going up, you missed that line. I'm just thinking, do I believe you?
Totally. Yeah. This is not to say don't improv or like,
right.
You know, it's just more being prepared. Yeah. I guess is what
it is. Okay. So you touched on LA and Texas auditions, which was an incredible experience for us and kind of eye-opening experience. And this is what I want to talk about. Do actors need to be in LA to make it in this industry?
Less than they used to.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah. Because you can make your own stuff and put it on YouTube and, you know, whether you're acting in other people's stuff or you're making your own channel or whatever, there's many other ways to get discovered. And even the shows that are being made now, like shows like Workaholics or Broad City. I mean, I don't know if those guys lived in LA before they landed those gigs, but they chose them because they saw their talent on YouTube and said, we think these people can make a good show.
Yeah. Well, if you're just concerned about being an actor and making money from acting, you can do that anywhere. You can be in commercials, you can be in web promos, you can be in industrials, and you can do that from any town. I mean, just here in Austin, there are actors that make it because they are in like almost every commercial, whether it's local or national. And there's a lot of big cities in this country that you can do that in. Now, if you want to make it narrative in television, in movies, then eventually you are going to have to move out there. And here's why, and it's probably not the reason that you're thinking. The level of competition anywhere else but LA is not going to push you hard enough to make it in this industry. From what we saw in our auditions in Austin, it was just kind of a thing on the side that most of these actors were doing. They all had day jobs, and you're going to have a day job in LA too. But if you've moved to LA to be an actor, that is your primary goal, and that is what you were spending all of your waking time thinking about and sharpening. And it shows. The level of confidence and intelligence and professionalism in LA from these actors that are, again, they were all in their 20s, early 20s, like us, was just leaps and bounds ahead of the actors that were here in Austin. And it's kind of a bummer that that's the way that it is, because I want to think that there's great acting everywhere. But the level of competition obviously just sharpens those actors, because they know they have to be better. Mm-hmm. You could be the best actor in Louisiana, you know, but if there's not anybody else pushing you to be better, then you're just going to settle for that. And you'll be the best actor in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. But if you go to LA, there's going to be 1,000 of people that look just like you that want the same roles that you have. And you're going to force yourself to get better at the craft.
Well, I like the idea of going out there with that as the mindset. I'm going to do this to become a better actor, not because I'm a great actor and people are going to see me and discover me and I'm going to be a big shot once I get there. You're probably not. I mean, just statistically. But because of the community that you're in, it will grow you as an actor. And that if your goal is to be the best actor you can be, then whether you land that major role in, you know, a big studio film or not, you will be accomplishing the goal that you set out to do, which is be the best actor you can be. Other benefits are, even though the odds of landing a great role are still low, there are more roles of all types, commercial and narrative, in Hollywood. And we'll throw New York in there too. New York's huge, obviously a little more directed towards stage acting than film and TV. But New York and LA, both kind of the big hubs. But you're surrounded by a community of people, which increases the competitive spirit and your drive to be the best. But it also increases the connections, the way that you can hear about opportunities and the way that you can help out your friends, you know, or be helped out by your friends getting into different opportunities to get discovered. So that's a big thing, is the community out there.
Yeah. So we're going to land the plane on this soon. We want to talk a little bit about Believe Me, and just our experience casting that and then working with actors. And yeah, I just want to mention, you know, there was one really interesting thing with Believe Me when we were casting it, is we auditioned hundreds of actors, dozens actually, just for the one role of Callie character in our movie, Believe Me. And they were all incredibly talented, beautiful, smart actresses. And the role eventually went to Johanna Brady. And it's weird, because looking back on that experience, I mean, there's actresses that we had seen in other projects that were like, I can't even believe they're in here auditioning for our movie. And they made sense to cast based on just Twitter followers alone, which is a sad reality of this industry, that the way that it's going now, your influence on social media plays a huge role in what you're going to get and what roles you can take, which we'll get into in a second. But Johanna had something that we couldn't really explain why it was different. She was confident, sure. She was smart, sure. But she knew the role and brought something to it that I don't think any of the other actresses had. And when she left, we all just kind of knew that it was her. And I think in this industry, what's hard is producers and directors look at a ton of actors, and there's just going to be one that stands out. And sometimes you can't exactly put your finger on it, but sometimes you're going to be right for it, and other times it's just not the right role for you. It's not that you didn't do a good job or that you're doing something wrong necessarily. It's just that the right role hasn't come along.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, especially in our Hollywood casting, there were very few times we just said, that person's not good enough of an actor to play this. It was just like, that person didn't bring a special feeling, you know, to the room when they gave that performance, which is weird and it's frustrating. I can't imagine having your performance constantly judged on such an abstract, subjective level, you know?
Yeah.
So that's got to be frustrating for actors, but take solace and just kind of embrace the fact that if you've put in the work, if you've prepared, you've learned the lines, you've learned the character, you've taken a unique approach, you've put together your reel, your headshot, done all this other preparation, and you get into that audition and you don't land the role, you don't have to constantly battle that insecurity that you're not good enough. You put the work in, And it is just a matter of finding the right fit.
Yeah.
You know, and if you don't ever find this dream role, this dream fit, that's okay too, because like, as we established at the beginning, you're not going into this with this dependent happiness.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can be a great actor and not get cast for a role just because it's not the right role for you. And that's going to hurt. And it's going to hurt every time. Yeah. You're going to fail over and over again. And honestly, the people that make it in this industry are the ones the most comfortable with hearing the words no and moving forward and not getting discouraged. And I think that's probably most of your battle as an actor, is not getting discouraged and not giving up. So that's why we say, why we said at the beginning, resiliency is really one of the biggest, if not the biggest thing to have as an actor. I remember on Believe Me, I can't remember if it was Alex or Max that said this, but we were just talking about what it's like to be an actor. And they said the most difficult thing is, you know, on one project, you're treated like a king because you're the star, and that's just the reality of it. And then on another project, you're just an ensemble character, or you're an extra, and you're just treated like dirt. And it's a weird, like, mental complex to deal with, where from every project, you're either praised or you're just kind of stepped on, and it messes with your head. And not only that, but you're also trying to work for a director where you are performing for the approval of the director. So you're constantly being told, that's not good enough, that's not good enough, that's not good enough, that was great. And you live for those moments where it's great, but a lot of your job is rejection and auditions and struggling to please a director. And so it is kind of a weird lifestyle that's very challenging, and that's why you see so many actors that are insecure about who they are, and they constantly need approval because most of their job is looking for approval.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, if there's one overall recommendation I could make, it's the lesson from that story. And it's, go into everything looking to give and not to take or demand, you know, credit or whatever else, your fame, whatever else you're looking for. If you go into an audition with the attitude, I'm looking to serve this director in this project and give whatever I can to it, and if they don't think I have the right thing to give to it, that's great, because my goal is to make this project succeed. And then if you do get a role, if you go on set thinking, I want to be kind to my fellow castmates, whether they're the stars or they're extras, I want to be kind and have a good attitude with the director and the producers. I want to be easy to work with. I want to make this project great for everybody involved, not so that I get famous or that I get successful or whatever. And if you go in with that attitude and you really do have humility and self-assurance that that is your goal and not all this other stuff that distracts you, long-term, it's going to serve everything else, because it's going to give you more confidence. It's going to battle that insecurity that makes people give bad performances. It's going to make people want to have you back and work with you again. And I mean, we both did theater in high school, which it's a different world, but you can see it even back then, that there are the weird drama kids, and it's because they're insecure about making themselves look awesome all the time. And they get a chip on their shoulder or start acting really strange when they don't look awesome. Don't be one of those people. Be one of the people that wants to make everyone else look awesome, and people will want to have you back, and you're going to get bigger and better opportunities.
That's all I've got on acting. I mean, I want to ask you who your favorite actors are, but is there anything else you want to talk about?
Shia LaBeouf, bro.
All right. Guys, we're going to end the show like we do every time, on a high note, talking about Shia LaBeouf. So I think that's an appropriate way to end this one.
Yep.
This show is produced by us. Will Backe, Michael B. Allen,
Wilbur, where can people go online to find out more about Riot Studios?
I'm glad you asked that. They can go to riotstudios.com/anything that they want. Book, podcast, films, anything. Go to riotstudios.com. You can get everything you want.
Facebook.com/riotstudios and Twitter @riotstudios.
And check out our book. We go into even more stuff about acting. We talk about how directors work with actors and what life's like on set, which is great. But Michael, enough jibber jabber about the book and this podcast. Let's ask the question everyone's wondering: where would we be without our sponsors?
Under hot pursuit from a grizzly bear, deciding to play dead and unsure whether our acting skills will be enough to pull it off.
This episode is brought to you by Shia LaBeouf. Don't laugh at that because he might be right behind you, watching and waiting. He's like the new Chuck Norris, I feel like.
No, dude. He's...
Take him seriously.
He's bigger than Chuck.
I do believe he's destined for great things. He really messed up that Indiana Jones movie, though.
Well, that was doomed from the start.
That's true. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.